What I love about your approach is that you're very confident in being like, ask away. Often what happens with questioners is like they run into like a thin-skinned boss, or they get into a teacher or a coach, someone who's like, I don't want your questions. You should do it my way. I'm in charge. We've always done it this way. If you are asking questions, you're questioning my authority. You're undermining my judgment. I don't want to work with you. You're not a team player. They don't understand that questioners need to have those questions answered in order to follow through. Once they get those answers, they will execute. They will follow through. Absolutely. But they need to have those questions answered. And if they don't have those questions answered, well, then the action does not follow.
Welcome to the Beyond Success Podcast, a collection of conversations with the best business minds, captains of industry, and entrepreneurs in the world. Learn what their journey has taught them, how they applied the lessons they learned, and ultimately created six, seven, and even eight-figure businesses. We can't create successful businesses by ourselves, so sit back and let the Beyond Success Podcast be your mentor. Now, here's your host, author, entrepreneur, public speaker, and master money manifester, Daniel Mangana.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Beyond Success. I'm your host, Daniel Mangana. I'm joined today. I'm a bit calmer now, guys, but a few moments ago, I was having a total geek out fanboy moment because my guest today is international, best-selling, super-duper, fang-dangle, amazing Gretchen Rubin. For those of you who have ever heard me talking about Money DNA, who have been to a Money DNA workshop, you've heard me talk about a little thing called your four tendencies. You probably heard me talking about the way that I navigate life as a rebel. Well, here joining me is the rockstar human who's behind this whole idea, this whole concept, this whole study. And I'm excited to bring her to meet you all today. So without further ado, why don't you introduce yourself, Gretchen, and let the people know who you are and what it is you do.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm so happy to get the chance to talk to you today. I'm Gretchen Rubin. I'm a writer who studies happiness, good habits, human nature, the four tendencies, as you said. I'm a writer. I am probably best known for books like The Happiness Project, The Four Tendencies, Better Than Before. I also have a podcast, a weekly podcast called Happier with Gretchen Rubin. And I have an app, as one does, called the Happier app. That's all about helping people to keep up their habits. And it uses the four tendencies that I think we will start talking about soon.
Oh, we're going to start talking about it.
All right.
You're coming in from, you're still based in New York?
I am. I'm in New York City.
New York City. So let's bring this to regular, the concept of what's going on right now. Right now, the point of recording, we're recording this on the 6th of April, 2022. War has been going on everywhere, but right now all eyes are on Ukraine. Everyone's standing with Ukraine. We've got firefighters flying out from Canada to go and do the thing, and there's uproar. In the face of all of this, when we've spent 2 years of a lot of people being locked down, I mean, I live in Mexico, so I didn't have the same experience of COVID as a lot of people, but happiness has probably been something that's been a little bit further out of reach for people up until now. How does your work and your research support people in as extreme circumstances as we've been experiencing over this last 2 years?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, sometimes some people worry that it's not even appropriate to seek to be happier in the face of tragedy, injustice, suffering. They think, well, you know, I have all the elements of a happy life. If I'm not happy, I must be a spoiled brat, or it's not morally appropriate for me to think about my own happiness in the face of what others are suffering. But in fact, what research shows, and I think common experience confirms this, is that happier people are actually more interested in the problems of the world, and they're more interested in the problems of the people around them. And they donate more time, they donate more money, they're more likely to volunteer and vote, they have healthier habits, they make better team members and better leaders, they're more likely to help out if a family member or a friend or a neighbor or colleague needs a hand. When we're happier, we have the emotional wherewithal to turn outward and to think about the pain of the world. And when we're less happy, we tend to become isolated and preoccupied, and defensive, you know, we're thinking about our own problems because we're not very happy. So I really do think that it is a worthwhile thing to seek to be happier, because that's what really gives us the energy that we need to turn outward. It's like, you know, it's that old cliche about put on your own oxygen mask first. If you're going to care for others, you have to care for yourself. And that leads to your question, which is, when there is all this disruption, when there is all this suffering, when we see injustice, what do we do to work on our own happiness? And that's really what I'm interested in, is like, what can you do tomorrow without anybody else cooperating to be happier, healthier, more productive, more creative? I'm not saying that organizations, institutions, culture don't matter. 100% they matter. They matter enormously. But what I look at is really what the ordinary person can do as part of the ordinary day without taking a lot of extra time, energy, or money to try to support their happiness. And the good news is, it turns out there's a lot that an ordinary person can do as part of their ordinary day. For most of us, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, I find.
Awesome. And of course, the work that you've done, the research that you've done, actually documents and quantifies this and gives us some practical steps that we can follow. And we can even put ourselves in particular groups so that we don't have to follow a cookie cutter approach of trying, you know, spattering different things.
Yes.
We can say, oh, hang on a minute. I'm an obliger. Right. So boom, boom, boom. Or like me, I'm a rebel. Okay. Yes. How do I feel about this? What's my choice? Right. What are my options? So there are, I love this. Number one, that you just dismantled the idea of people thinking that, oh, if I'm going to go and be successful, or if I'm going to go and be happy, it actually puts you in a better place to put yourself first so that you can serve others, rather than being in this disempowering state, is what it felt like you were describing, this disempowering state of I'm down, I'm in the dumps, I don't have anything to contribute. So it's really powerful. Thank you for that. Thank you. Before we dive into the work that I'm obsessed with, totally obsessed. Yeah, guys, the first time I heard Gretchen on Tony Robbins' podcast, I literally went immediately and purchased the book and jumped straight into it and just been a fanboy since then. So I'm very happy to be here. Okay, I'm no longer a fanboy. I'm back to being a serious podcast host. What was the journey that brought you into researching happiness, researching, you know, how we deal with expectations? What's the journey to being someone who goes into that kind of world?
Well, I started my career in law, but at a certain point, I realized, you know what? I would rather fail as a writer than succeed as a lawyer. So I should try take my shot. So I did, and fortunately for me, it worked out. And then the Happiness Project, which is probably the book that I'm most known for, was actually my fourth book. Many people, I worked for 10 years to be an overnight sensation, and I got inspired. I wrote a biography of Winston Churchill. Of JFK. And I was inspired to start in on the subject of happiness because I was stuck on a city bus. And I just thought to myself, well, what do I want from life anyway? And I thought, well, I want to be happy. And I realized I didn't know could I be happier? What did it mean to be happy? And I thought, well, I should have a happiness project. And I ran out to the library, got a giant stack of books. And at first it was just for me. It was just for my own happiness, but it was such a rich subject that finally, I thought, oh, well, I should write a book about this. And in fact, it's turned out to be such a fascinating, endless subject that I've basically been studying happiness in one way or another ever since. I found my way to the Four Tendencies framework that so strikes a chord with you, because when you start talking about happiness, you quickly end up in the area of habits, because a lot of times people are like, well, I know I'd be happier if I exercised, or if I got more sleep, or if I read more books, or I stayed in better touch with my friends, or I ate healthier. So why aren't you doing those things? Well, often it's a problem of habit formation. So that got me very preoccupied in the question of how people did or did not successfully change their habits. And what I found, and you mentioned this earlier, is like there, it turns out, as much as we want a one size fits all solution, and we all want the one page PDF that we can download from the internet, you know, the 7 bullet points, it turns out there's not one right way. I mean, you mentioned that you're a rebel. A lot of things that work for other people just do not work for rebels. They actually are counterproductive. They will get in the way of rebels. You're making things worse if you're trying to do this or that to help. And so once you understand that people are different and how people are different, then you're much better able to deal effectively with yourself. You're not just throwing spaghetti against the wall. You're saying like, well, given that I'm an obliger, given that I'm an upholder, what would other people's experience suggest would work for me most effectively? So you can kind of be more efficient in what, how you set things up. And it also lets you be more compassionate with other people and more understanding. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I'm like, hey, Dan, why can't you just put it on the, I'm going to put it on the calendar. Just go do it. And you're like, I don't want anything on the calendar. I'm like, how is this possible? I love my calendar. It's like, oh, but not everybody does. And now I can understand. You just have a different perspective. It's not that I'm right or you're right. It's just that we see things in a different way. So we have to find a way for both of us to thrive rather than spending a lot of energy saying I'm right, you're wrong, or you're right, I'm wrong, which people get kind of caught up in those arguments.
Yeah, I mean, this work has been so impactful with the guys that we're supporting in creating success in their business and in their personal finances, because there are so many people that have been, I've got to get an accountability partner. And then you're wondering why you're not taking any actions, because someone's expecting something of you. You're automatically going to resist it.
Yes.
I even had this, the time when my rebelness made me laugh the most was when I went to go and get a fitness coach. And you know, Megan, bless her soul, who just got married. Congratulations, Megan. She listens to the podcast. She's going to be really excited to hear what I'm talking to you. She's like, so this week you're going to work out four times. And before I was like, I was working out every day. And soon as I was like,
there you go.
And then I realized, oh, I'm a rebel. So I said to her, can you just phrase it this way? Just say, hey, how many days, like, are there some days that you think it would be good for you to work out? I need you to frame it as a question to bypass, you know, my mind. Yeah. And then boom, I'm back up to doing the workouts. It's fascinating how even like doctor's instructions, I've got some medicine I'm supposed to be drinking today. And I'm just laughing at myself that I'm really resisting drinking the medicine because someone gave me an instruction to drink the medicine. And so I keep coming back to, you want to drink the medicine, Dan, because you want to be healthy. Yes. You're in choice here. This person is supporting you. It's an offer, not an expectation.
Yes, that is exactly it. Yeah, no, so should I kind of define each of the four tendencies?
Yeah, let's define them and dive in.
Because I'm sure everybody's like, ooh, what does this mean?
The weirdos that haven't heard about this yet.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned this earlier, this is about expectations. It's how we respond to expectations, which sounds very dull, but ends up being very juicy, as you say.
Very juicy
And all of us face two kinds of expectations. So we face outer expectations, like a request from a friend, a work deadline, or like my fitness coach is telling me to work out, outer expectations. And then there's an inner expectation, my own desire to keep a New Year's resolution, my own desire to get back into meditation. So depending on how we meet or resist outer and inner expectations, that makes us an upholder, a questioner, an obliger, or a rebel. So upholders readily meet outer and inner expectations. They meet the work deadline, they keep the New Year's resolution without much fuss. They want to do what other people expect from them, but their expectations for themselves are just as important. So their motto is, discipline is my freedom. That's me. I'm an upholder. Then there are questioners. Questioners question all expectations. They'll do something if they think it makes sense. So they always need to know why. They resist anything arbitrary. Like January 1st is an arbitrary date. They need to have reasons, justifications. They want things to be efficient. So they're making everything an inner standard. If it meets their inner standard, they'll do it no problem. If it fails their inner standard, they will push back. So their motto is, I will comply if you convince me why. Then there are obligers. An obliger is the biggest tendency for both men and women. This is the one that the biggest group of people belong to. So you either are an obliger, or you have many obligers in your life. I'm sure you have many obligers in your audience. Obligers readily meet outer expectations, but they struggle to meet inner expectations. And so the key for an obliger is to meet an inner expectation. You have to create a system of outer accountability. You need that architecture of outer accountability. So if you want to read more, you join a book group. If you want to exercise more, you take a class, you work out with a trainer, you work out with a friend who's going to be annoyed if you don't show up, you raise money for a charity. There are a lot of ways to create outer accountability. Once you realize that's what you need. And I got this from when a friend said to me, you know, it's funny, I was in high school and I was on the track team and I never missed track practice. So why can't I go running now on my own? Well, because when she had the team and the coach, she showed up no problem. But when she was just doing it on her own, it was a struggle. So their motto is, you can count on me and I'm counting on you to count on me. And then finally, Ravels, which is your tendency. Ooh. And I got to say, this is the smallest tendency. This is the one the fewest people belong to, but it's a very conspicuous tendency. So Rebels want to do what they want to do in their own way, in their own time. But if you ask or tell them to do something, they're very likely to resist. So they are resisting. They resist outer expectations and they resist inner expectations. They don't even tell themselves what to do. Like typically they don't sign up for like a 10 a.m. woodworking class on Saturday because they think, I don't know what I'm going to want to do on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And just the idea that this is somebody's expecting me to show up is going to annoy me. And so their motto is, you can't make me. And neither can I. And you know, just as your example about, you know, taking the medicine is a good, is a perfect illustration. If you know someone's tendency, you can speak to them in a way that's going to make it much more likely that they will be inclined to do what you would like them to do. And when you're speaking to yourself, like I know a rebel who was wanted to write a book. And usually with a nonfiction book, you get a book contract before you write the book. You get the contract, you get some money, and then you go ahead and write the book. But he didn't do it that way. He wrote the whole book first. And I said to him, why did you do that? And he said, because if somebody's telling me what to do, if I have an editor and an agent being like, hey, where's chapter 5? And hey, I need it by the end of the month. I'm not going to want to do it. But right now I'm like, I feel like writing a book. I feel like showing people my brilliant ideas and putting them out into the world. And once I do that, I'm going to want to get paid for it. And I want people to read it. So I'll write it because that's what I want to do. And then I'll sell it because that's what I want to do. But if I've got some editor saying, hey, you got to write 10,000 words by next week, he's like, I just won't. So he knew that about himself. Just like you knew, how do I talk to myself so I take this medicine? Or like, how do I talk to my coach so that my coach can communicate with me without igniting that spirit of resistance? He knew that about himself. So it's very useful to know these things about yourself and other people.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that we do, you know, there's a few psychometrics that we do with all our people coming to our programs, and actually most of my audience for my programs are questioners. I seem to attract questioners.
Well, that's very, well, then you would want to communicate with them in a very questioner way. You must satisfy their need for justifications and reasons. If they keep coming to you, they must find that. But it's helpful to know that that's a really essential thing that you're providing.
And one of the things that I found to be really potent is creating a space for people to have permission to ask those questions.
Yes.
Like there's one of the guys, Papa Randy, if you're listening, hey, Papa Randy, he's like, I'm so sorry, I'm asking these so many questions. I said, no, don't apologize.
Right.
Ask the questions. I always say there's no such thing as a stupid question. There's no such thing as a pointless question or a useless question. If there's a gap in your understanding, we want to support you. Do ask your question. And so that's one thing that we've been found to be really, really powerful. But just having that information, a big part of Money DNA as an idea is understanding, where does my flow exist with abundance? And I need to know enough about me to know where that flow exists. If someone wants to create more success in their business and more success in their finances, or to have those good money habits, when you understand, hang on a minute, I really can't have a financial advisor that's going to be telling me, do this, do this, do that, do this. I need to do my research, find someone that's maybe going to do the execution, blah, 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 blah. Or if I want to go and, you know, do the action that's going to create more sales in my business, I need to do it in a way that maybe I set the goals and I reflect, like, for example, with me, I reset my goals every week and I reconnect with, am I still excited about this? Is this still something that I want to do?
Yeah.
I don't allow it to get stale because that staleness is going to disempower me from taking the action because someone holding me accountable is not going to work, right?
Well, 100%. And that's key because for rebels, it's identity, it's choice, it's freedom. It's, this is what I want. I'm staying very in touch with what I want. And that is their superpower. It's like that tie to their authentic desires and motivations and putting that out into the world. And I will say for me as an upholder, like to me, I would find that tiring. I'm like, I want to make up my mind and just do it. I don't want to constantly reflect. To me, that feels like, oh, why are we going over this again? Like it's on my list. I've identified it as like a priority. Like now I'm just going to execute on that. And it's not that one way is right and one way it's wrong. It's that you need to have that fresh in your mind. And I just can make that commitment and then do it. And a questioner may constantly always be sort of needing to poke and prod and make sure, is this the most efficient? Is this the most up to date? Are you really an authority? I'm assuming that you're an authority, but like, am I really confident in your judgment? Because I'll follow what you say. If I'm confident in you, maybe I need to keep testing that from time to time. And what I love about your approach is that you're very confident in being like, ask away. Often what happens with questioners is like they run into like a thin-skinned boss, or they get into a teacher or a coach, someone who's like, I don't want your questions. You should do it my way. I'm in charge. We've always done it this way. If you are asking questions, you're questioning my authority. You're undermining my judgment. I don't want to work with you. You're not a team player. They don't understand that questioners need to have those questions answered in order to follow through. Once they get those answers, they will execute. They will follow through. Absolutely. But they need to have those questions answered. And if they don't have those questions answered, well, then the action does not follow. And so you can't brush that aside. Like, oh, this is just some extra step that I'm going to eliminate. No, that is essential for questioners.
Yeah, I think I'm just, one of my pet peeves is the cookie cutter approach. Just do it this way and it's going to work.
But everybody wants to give that and people want to get it. I'm like, why do you want a cookie cutter approach?
It sells.
I know, but it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. I know.
It doesn't work. I mean,
same team.
I mean, I don't understand. I don't get it. It's like even morning people or night people. There's so much advice. Get up early. Do it first thing in the morning. Join the 5 a.m. team. Do it. And I'm like, yeah, unless you're a night person, in which case you're most productive and energetic and creative later in the day. You maybe, I just talked to somebody who does her exercise at midnight. I have a writer friend who's wildly successful, who does most of her writing between like 11 and 3 a.m. I'm like, how can you tell those people they're not successful? How can you tell them they're doing it in the wrong way? It's like, there is no right way and wrong way. There's only what works for you. And you just got to take the time and like, look in the mirror, right? And then suit yourself, because I know. How is it that we're like, I feel like we're on a small team here. Like, but it's so obvious, right? We know there's not one size fits all. We know that just from looking around in our own families and our own friends. I mean,
it's the ease of communication, though. Of
I guess. Yes, you're right.
With the sexy marketing.
Yes, and, you're right.
Oh, I can spend $4.99 and I'm going to get the perfect.
The promise that this is the solution. This is the best way. This is the right way. If it works for me, then everybody else has to do it my way. Which is, I have to say, as an upholder, I used to have a little bit like, I used to have that feeling much more like, well, this works for me. So if everybody would just do it my way, it would work for them. And like, finally, I'm like, not so much. Like, pay attention to the world. But even more discouraging, and I'm sure you see this, people really get down on themselves. They say, well, other people can just get up and do this. Other people have no trouble tracking their income. Other people don't have any trouble setting a list of priorities. What's wrong with me? I'm not a real adult. I must be lazy. I lack self-control. I can't keep my promises to myself. And they're really they get very discouraged and down on themselves. When in fact, I'm just like, you need outer accountability. And by the way, so does a huge group of people. There's nothing wrong with that. Now that we know that we need it, there's a lot of different ways that you can, like a lot of people need it. And there's all different tools to help you get the outer accountability you need. There's like, it's just something that is part of like your approach to the world. There's a huge amount of strengths in the obliger tendency. They're great leaders. They're great contributors. They're often amazing employees. I know people who only want to hire obligers. They want to screen. Wow. So they only hire obligers. They're amazing, you know, participants, but they need this outer accountability. So, okay. That's not a big deal. It's just something that works for obligers. So let's get them what they need to achieve their aims and not make them feel like, oh, I shouldn't need outer accountability, or I should kind of kick the training wheels off the off the bicycle. It's like, no, this is just a thing people need. It's no big deal.
Thank you for that. There's another thing that I wanted to just quickly touch on before we speak a little bit more about the work that you're doing now and your podcast and give people a bit more information about that. And this is one trait that I've seen in upholders, that they can burn out saying yes to everything. And so with our upholder guys, we would say, apply some discernment with what you're saying yes to, because if you say yes, you're going to follow through. So are you nourishing yourself first? Are you prioritizing what you're saying yes to? I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Well, I think that often when you see that, more often you see that with obligers, because many upholders, not all upholders, as you say, but for many upholders, part of what they can do is they can create an inner expectation. Like, I'm sorry, I can't go to that meeting. I have a yoga class that I'm committed to, or, I I'm sorry, I would like to help you, but I have my own task that I have to do, so I don't have time to help you. So often that is more of a problem with obligers, because they're the ones that feel like this immense pressure to meet an outer expectation. And it's hard for them to keep the inner expectation, maybe like, I need to get sleep, or I want to take a class, or but you're exactly right that sometimes upholders have this, the form that it often takes in upholders is tightening. This is when the rules get tighter and tighter and tighter. So you might say, like, I remember talking to a medical student who said, you know, I used to not review my notes before class. And then a few times I reviewed my notes before class. And now every single time I go to class, I review my notes before class, even though I know that is not a good use of my time, but I can't seem to stop doing it. And I'm like, what's happened is the rules are getting tighter on you. You're sort of like, you got a rule in your head, and now it's getting more and more and more rigorously enforced. And so what you have to do with an upholder when that happens, when they start getting exhausted or they get kind of caught up in their own red tape, is to say, okay, let's get in touch with that inner expectation. What is this is kind of the rebel side of it. You know, what do you really want? What's your real expectation for yourself? Is this serving you? And you have to make it very, very specific. You have to really articulate that, because what for an upholder, once an inner expectation is articulated, it can be met. But if it's sort of vague and in the background, especially for some upholders, the outer expectation, which is very explicit, will trump. So for upholders, it's about bringing inner expectations into the fore. Whereas for obligers, it's creating outer accountability, even for an inner expectation, which sounds like kind of a subtle difference, but it's actually quite a big difference when you see it in the world. I don't know if your audience are Game of Thrones fans, but you just think of something.
So we can talk about it all day long.
Yeah, well, the four tendencies are all over. So if you think of somebody like Stannis Baratheon, Brienne of Tarth, upholders, then you think of someone like Daenerys Targaryen, Jon Snow, Jaime Targaryen, they're obligers. So you see kind of the difference in the quality, the kind of the relentlessness and the kind of the kind of arrow like force, but Tywin Lannister upholder. So you see that, and then you see that with the obligers, they're more like in that space of weighing and feeling pulled and feeling the weight of the outer expectation more.
I do see that. And obviously Tyrion, apart from being Electra's little imp,
he's a questioner. He's the one who's always like, isn't there a better way? Can't we like, why are we transferring power in this way? I think there's a better way. Hey, you think you need to take conquer this way? I think we should do it this way. He's the one who's always explicitly saying, I'm learning. I'm seeing everything. I'm very interested in reading. I'm interested in seeing all these different cultures. And I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to do things. He likes ruling because he likes to saying like, oh, let's figure out how to do this better. So he is a very, very clear questioner. Awesome. Interesting. Well, we can't get too far into this, but Rebel, your tendency is both Arya and Cersei. They're both rebels.
Who would you say are the rebels? And is it someone that I'm going to be scared to be teamed up with?
Well, Arya and Cersei, they know what they want and nobody stands in their way. And if you think back, there's a moment when the father of Cersei says to Arya directly, "You remind me of my daughter." So there's even in the show they are linked as kind of similarly natured. And you would say, "Well, Arya is this huge force for good?" Cersei, no.
Not so much.
Not so much. But it's kind of this like, hey, you think you're going to tell me what to do? I don't think so. You know, and they're both put in a position where like everybody's telling them what to do, and they find a way They find their own way to resist it and to pursue their own aims. And so it's interesting. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes people think like, oh, if you're a rebel, you're creative or you're selfish or whatever. And like, we don't know anything about you other than how you respond to expectations, because depending on your values, how adventurous, curious, extroverted, analytical, adventuresome, all these things are going to make you very different. What your values are matters tremendously. But what's going to be the same is how do you respond to expectations? That's what makes the tendency the same. You can't assume anything about somebody from knowing their tendency. So it's not like a lot of personality profiles, they kind of try to make a lot of assumptions about you. This is telling, this is only one aspect of your nature, but it turns out to be significant. And I should say, if anybody wants to run and take the quiz as we're talking, if you go to GretchenRubin.com/four tendencies, F-O-U, four tendencies, you can take the quiz. Like 3.5 million people have taken it. It's really quick and easy. And it will give you probably know what you are. I think most people probably know what they are from this conversation.
It's great to do that. It's great to do that, though. It's if you like to do the test, though.
Yeah, if you like it, like to take it, get a response and kind of get a little report. It's at GretchenRubin.com/four tendencies. Yeah.
Brilliant. We'll pop a link to that in the show notes.
Oh, good. Guys. Yeah, thank
you. Yeah. And you guys, anyone who's done any of our Money DNA workshops, you know, this is one of the things that we love to bring in, because in terms of, I just see so many people who are stuck at the action taking piece.
Yes. Yes.
And just, right? It's just, it just opens up the field for you to be able to take the action that you know that you want to take. You know, we see people that invested in their personal development, you know, they go and spend all the money on mastermind or a coach or, you know, going to a program and going to, and then they just still feel stuck. But when you understand some of these pieces about yourself, it's like, oh, I just need that accountability. Oh, I need to drop the accountability with what I want, whatever the thing is.
Mm-hmm. But people will say to rebels like, oh, you have to have accountability. That's what's going to work for you, because it works for so many people, because a lot of people are obligers. And I'm like, no, they don't like that micromanaging. They don't want somebody looking over their shoulder. Like, that's not what moves the needle for a rebel. Yeah. But for an obliger, it's
exactly what they need.
Essential.
Well, Gretchen, I'm feeling my fanboy pot is getting nice and full right now. I do want to pivot a little bit and speak about the work that you're doing now. So we've got the podcast, obviously the books. We'll pop a link to your website and direct links to things for people in the show notes. What are you really excited about creating right now? What's really what's that, floating your boat right now?
Well, I'm working on a book right now about the five senses, which will be out next summer, not this summer, but next summer.
You've got to come back when you're ready to put it out.
Absolutely. I would love that. And it's all about sort of how we can use our five senses. You know, I just felt like I was up in my head, kind of like everything was sort of either hypersaturated or kind of thin. And I just realized I wanted to get out into my five senses. And it's just such a delicious, delightful, like refreshing, revitalizing exercise to like get out into your senses. So I just go through all five senses and talk about sort of different exercises and ways to explore the five senses. And it is just the most, it's just such a rich, delightful subject. It's such a playful subject, which I think everybody needs right now. Like everybody just like, they need that lightness and that kind of energy, that energy flowing in, I feel like. And we can really tap into our five senses for that. I have found. So I'm really excited about that book.
Yeah, we definitely got to bring you back to speak about that.
Absolutely.
I'm holding you to that, Miss Upholder. Oh,
yeah, I will. Yeah. You'll have to fight me off. Yeah.
So, guys, I think audience, you're going to join me in thanking Gretchen for just coming and pouring into us today. Really, really grateful for these insights, the opportunity to dialogue with you and meet one of my heroes.
Oh, well, it's so fun for me to get to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So we've got your name, GretchenRubin.com/four tendencies, F-O-U-R, to go and grab the test. Happier Podcast or Happiness from Gretchen Rubin. We'll pop a link to the podcast in the show notes. Guys, you listen to podcasts because you're listening to this one. Go and get your cup filled a little more by subscribing to the podcast, listening and letting Gretchen and the team know how you're loving it. Any closing ideas, thoughts, or words for the listeners today?
I would just come back to this idea that you and I were talking about. It's like with such excitement, like there's no one right way, like no tool fits every hand. It really is just a question. Mm-hmm. Like think back on your past. When did, was there a time when you succeeded in the past? What appeals to you? Like, what kind of person are you? Don't, if things aren't working, you just change your circumstances, change your schedule, change your setup. There's nothing wrong with you. You don't need to change. Just change the way things are set up. And often that's all you need to do to achieve your aims. Just do it in the way that's right for you. And, you know, I mean, I'm an upholder, you're a rebel, we're opposites. It's like the fact that the same things don't work for us, that's fine. We don't have to agree on the best way. We just have to find the way that's best for us and to like help each other thrive.
Awesome. Well, thank you for migrating into the risk of maybe being a poor writer instead of being a great lawyer. Being a great writer, that's just great work with the world in a great way. Really appreciate you. Listeners, keep dreaming with your eyes open. Remember, you can consciously choose a more abundant, joyful, purpose-driven life, and you can do it with a lot more flow if you know which of these groups you are in. Remember that happiness is available and it's not selfish to put your happiness first. Bye for now.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Beyond Success podcast. We hope that it has been of service to you. For more information and to stay up to date with the latest from Daniel Mangena, please head over to dreamwithdan.com. We'll see you for the next one.